Borders are often taken to be a determining aspect of territory, and territory then regularly is largely, I think unproblematically, defined as a bounded space or the state as a bordered power container. The complications with territory, it seems to be assumed, come from particular territorial configurations or disputes rather than from the concept itself. But what I want to suggest is, what if it was that territory itself was complicated rather than simply the particular ways that territory is configured in the world? And what if, instead of borders defining territory, it was actually the other way round, that territory as calculable political space makes borders as boundaries possible? In other words, we might need to think territory without borders in order to understand borders better. Territory, on my reading, must be understood as a historically and geographically specific form of political spatial organisation and as a specific form of a concept of political thought. It doesn't seem to me that it can simply be taken for granted, nor can it be approached through the question of territoriality, which is one of the other ways people approach the question. Territoriality, for me, lacks the historical and geographical specificity that territory has. Now, if we shift the focus away from borders in understanding territory, that doesn't mean for a moment that I'm suggesting that borders are not important or that geography is being superseded today. Borders are obviously less important in some places, but are more important in others. And I know there's going to be a wide range of discussions of the political aspects today. So what I'm going to concentrate on more is the historical and the conceptual arguments that I've tried to make in a couple of books around these questions, particularly in the book The Birth of Territory, which will be coming out next year. And that's a broad-scale historical study of the emergence of the concept of territory within Western political thought. Because what it seems to me is striking in looking at that story is the relative rareness of the concept of territory in a number of key political texts. That the term territorium is used very sparingly in classical Latin. And it means effectively the land surrounding a political settlement, such as a town or a colony. It's used that way in Cicero, in Varro, in Seneca, but only once each in the extant writings of those thinkers. Only later does the term territorium begin to be used in a broader sense to describe the lands belonging to a single political unit. And even then it was used to characterise the vague notion of an area over which power might extend, or lands that were held as property, rather than the tightly circumscribed region that we understand today. Similarly, when the Romans discussed political control of land, they were much more likely to use terms relating to the idea of finis, a border or a limit. But again, they use that term in a much looser sense than we would today. Cicero, for example, tells us in the Republic that the Spartans claimed ownership over all of the lands that they could touch with a spear, in other words, where they could project their military power. The two key areas of Roman thinking that employed the notion of the territorium was the law and was the work of the Roman land surveyors, the Corpus Agrimensorum Romanorum. And this Roman law, particularly, was developed in the later Middle Ages with the rediscovery of Roman law texts, Justinian's codification of those texts, and their incorporation into political legal systems across Europe. And it was at this time, this is around the 14th century, that jurisdiction becomes tied to territory in an explicit way. That, it seems to me, to be a crucial development. Rather than territory simply being the land owned or controlled by the ruler, it now becomes the limit or the extent of the ruler's political power. Power becomes exercised over territory, and as a consequence over the people and the actions within it. Territory then is both the object of political rule and its extent. And particular kinds of political rule are exercised within that territory but do not extend beyond it. But that seems to me to be quite a late notion in Western political thought. And that 14th century legal sense comes into political theory, I think, still later, especially in the German writers of the 17th century who are trying to make sense of the multiple and conflicting powers within the Holy Roman Empire. And alongside those political legal developments, there's also a set of innovations in what might be called a more political technical register, which enabled polities or nascent states to survey, map, defend, catalogue and control their lands in new ways. Developments in a whole range of political techniques are therefore important in this broader story. Notions of limitation become instrumental in understanding these developing theories of territory, and many of the arguments and practice look to assert or reinforce that limitation. but borders are not ultimately the defining notion of a territory or the territories belonging to or subject to a political unit. Many of the borders of these historical polities were very loosely defined and were marked informally with ditches, fences, rivers, or other lines drawn on the ground. Those borders were often of an unspecified width and were more akin to a zone, what we might today call a frontier. They represented often a kind of fortification, sometimes a temporary stopping point to an empire that had a theoretically limitless extent. And only rarely were those borders actually fixed and static. It's often claimed that the first boundary in the modern sense as a defined line of zero width was the one through the Pyrenees that separated France and Spain following the 1659 Treaty of the Pyrenees. That boundary, it seems to me, was only made possible because of the legal practices and the technical ability that was available at that time. So territory then, in this modern sense, seems to me to be not something that we should understand as defined by borders, in that putting a border around something is sufficient to make it into a territory. Rather, territory is a multifaceted concept and practice, one that encompasses economic, strategic, legal, and technical aspects, and perhaps can be better understood as the political counterpart of the homogeneous, measured, and mathematicized notion of space that emerges with the scientific revolution. In that way of thinking, the political rendering of that sense of space is the condition of possibility for the demarcation of modern boundaries such as that one through the Pyrenees. The geometric basis of surveying and cartography was simply not present before. And it seems to me it's that understanding of political space that is fundamental, and the idea of boundaries a secondary aspect dependent on that first. If we focus on the determination of space that makes boundaries possible, and in particular the role of calculation in determining that space, I think that opens up a way of seeing that boundaries are not a primary distinction that separates territory from other ways of understanding political control of land, but a second-order problem founded on a particular sense of calculation and the consequent grasp of space. Space in that modern understanding is often something bounded and exclusive, but more crucially, more fundamentally, is something that is calculable, extended in three dimensions. And in the early modern period, in Europe particularly, we see a whole range of strategies applied to the lands controlled by political entities, such as these newly emerging states. Land is mapped, ordered, measured, divided, controlled in a variety of ways, with attempts at making it more homogeneous, movement of goods being allowed or disallowed, prevented or regulated, internal order being imposed across this area. And these kinds of political rationalities or techniques, similarly to the notion of population that is emerging at a similar time, these kinds of political techniques, it seems to me, can be understood as calculative. Political arithmetic, too, or population statistics, impacts on the land as well as on the people. Territory, then, on that reading, is a rendering of the emergent concept of space as a political legal category made possible by a range of techniques. So the modern notion of territory is certainly partly about boundaries and impermeability, but more as a particular form that it took in certain times and places. For a variety of reasons, this idea of a tightly circumscribed area with networks of rule and reinforced boundaries fits the aim of rulers in this period within Europe's history. At that time, the notion that these borders might be fixed, though, is not seriously considered. Land can still be conquered, bought, exchanged, or otherwise gained through alliances or marriage, or it can be removed through punitive peace settlements. Colonialism, of course, sees many of these ideas extended beyond Europe itself, though, of course, many of the techniques were first trialled in colonial settings and then brought back to Europe to affect what was happening there. Gaining territory through conquest or losing it as punishment through defeat is something that remains common into the 20th century, the Treaty of Versailles being the most obvious example there. But from the 16th century on, you get an increasingly clear sense in political theory of the rights of the sovereign power within their borders. Territory becomes increasingly associated with exclusive and absolute forms of sovereignty. So I hope this very brief sketch of a more historically nuanced understanding of the emergence of territory helps, but not simply in terms of understanding Europe's history, but also in understanding a broader set of questions. If we try and understand the way that territory relates to this idea of calculative space, this question of political technology, I think it helps us to make sense of a range of modern phenomena. The purpose here in what I'm doing in this work is much less to offer a better definition of territory. In other words, a definition of territory that can be compared with other definitions of territory. But it's to try to throw up the kinds of questions that we need to ask if we are to understand how territory has been understood and practiced in different times and in different places. If we conceive of territory as bringing together a variety of political phenomena, economic, strategic, legal, technical, I think it allows us to understand historically what's been going on with territory, but also to make sense of some of the questions that we're going to be grappling with over the next couple of days. It allows us to understand, I think, that while borders are extremely important, they're not the defining element of territory, but rather one of its consequences. Territory as a political counterpart of calculative space makes possible the delimitation and demarcation of borders as boundaries, these lines of zero width, rather than borders making territory. It might take on a strictly bordered form at particular times, but looser, overlapping, and multiple arrangements are also possible. I think then we can understand the plurality of different political spatial arrangements that take place. Now, the borderless world argument is, of course, something that is profoundly uneven. Some people are able to cross international boundaries with ease, others are delayed or prevented from crossing them, or even imprisoned within them. Many borders are, of course, now not located at the border, at the limit of the edge of the state, but are taken to other places. Non-recognised borders, such as the one between the Republic of Cyprus and the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, go through many of the motions of the performance of what a border is doing, even though clearly what you're seeing in that instance is something about how the way that any boundary at the moment is a frontier, that it has a width rather than that line of zero width idea. The wall in the West Bank, of course, is another anomaly. Israel's political, legally recognised sovereignty stops some way before you reach the wall, but the effective sovereignty and its projection of military power extends all the way to the Jordan Valley. And many other contemporary political geographical issues similarly complicate the straightforward idea of states exercising exclusive sovereignty within tightly defined borders. The most pressing border disputes today are often over maritime boundaries, with the strategic and economic importance of laying legal claim to rocks or small islands that would allow the technical exploitation of vast expanses of the sea or the seabed. Rich states leasing land from their neighbours, such as Singapore leasing the Bintan Island from Indonesia and using that as a tourist resort. China, of course, in Africa. Embassies and military bases open up a whole range of other questions in this register. And I tried to argue in a book that came out a couple of years ago that in the wider context of the war on terror, we're seeing a shift in the relation between territorial preservation and territorial sovereignty. Territorial preservation is the idea of the fixing of borders, the rejection of ideas that territory can be gained or lost. Territorial sovereignty, the idea that a state has exclusive sovereignty internally within those borders. I thought what we saw in the war on terror was the pulling apart of that relation between those, codified in the international legal term of territorial integrity, and seeing those being pulled apart, where in Afghanistan or Iraq, for instance, intervention was supposedly legitimised within their borders because of what they were doing, a kind of co-option of arguments around humanitarian intervention to apply to the pursuit of weapons of mass destruction or the harbouring of terrorists within their borders. But at the same time, the idea that the boundaries of those states might be changed, either externally in relation to their neighbours or a fracturing of those states along ethnic or religious lines, was disavowed by the international community. So that in early modern Europe, sovereignty was claimed to be absolute, but the borders within which it was exercised were continually mutable. Today, I think we're seeing the reverse, an attempt to have borders fixed, but the sovereignty within them contingent. Okay, let me come to a conclusion. It's well known that the question of biometrics, ways of understanding the human body as an individual but also as a population, depend on the basis of questions of calculation and metrics. But what I want to claim here is that the question around geopolitics also operates with similar operative principles. Just as population does not displace territory as the object of government, but both categories emerged at a similar historical juncture as new ways of rendering, understanding, governing the people and land, so too it seems with the contemporary moment. Biopolitics and geopolitics can be understood through processes of biometrics and geometrics, means of comprehending, compelling, organising and ordering. And it's the connection of these geometrically determined points that makes possible early modern projects of large-scale land surveying, cartographic plans, statistics, the description of the state. Borders as boundaries in early modern Europe, precise delimited lines drawn on maps and demarcated on the landscape, are made possible by those kinds of techniques and practices. The same logic, it seems to me, underpins the geometric borders of the Western continental United States, of Australia, the colonial boundaries in Africa and the Middle East. The same logic, it seems to me, makes sense of the shift to biometric borders today, to the offshore processing of immigration, the partitioning of the sea and the coastline, the lines drawn in the Arctic and the South Atlantic, with these contemporary techniques of maritime boundary delimitation. So on this argument, the calculation of space makes possible the drawing of lines. Territory then should not be understood to have a fixed definition, but in a more fluid way. Territory for me is not a product, but a process, a political technology or a bundle of political technologies. It's dependent on a range of techniques and operations. Territory, both as an idea and a practice, I think requires further analysis if we're to understand the different ways that it has contemporary limits and historical and geographical conditions of possibility and specificity. I hope that's what we're going to be doing over the next couple of days. As a political calculable space, territory makes possible a range of other determinations, and technologies of bordering are one example of the way that that can be realised. Thank you.